Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hi, I'm Tim Schwartz.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Riz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of RNIB Tech Talk. I am your host this week, Tim Schwartz. I want to thank you all for joining us. Stephen Scott is not with us this week. He actually, unfortunately, had a family emergency to tend to, so he'll be back with us next week. But with me, as he is each and every week, our faithful, devoted technology guru, Sean Preece. Sean, welcome to the show.
Can we not use words like guru? It puts unfulfillable expectations on me. Hey, Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. You're right. Yeah, we shouldn't use like expert, guru.
Hobbyist.
Yes. Yes. Sean Preece, hobbyist. Tech hobbyist. Exactly. And with us, as he has been in the past, to talk a little bit of Android, a little bit of Google news, the Android anorak himself, Riz. Riz, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tim. Host Tim, and hello, Guru Sean.
Stop it now. Stop it, Riz.
How dare you? So, like I said, we are going to get into a little bit of Android news, talk about the new Android Pi that has just been announced for Pixel phones. We'll get into that in a bit. A little bit of Samsung news coming up later as well that Riz is going to happily, hopefully, help us out with. And some more news going on in the tech world and your emails if we have time at the end. So all of that to come this week on RNIB Tech Talk. Of course, each and every week, we couldn't do this show without you guys, the listeners. So if you have questions or comments or anything you want to say to us, send your emails to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And first up this week, guys, recently we've had the announcement of the new Android operating system, and this time they've gone with Pi. So from Oreo to Pi, these announcements always just make me hungry. If Steven was here, he would just be completely on a tangent about what kind of pie he's going to eat and all that kind of thing. It just, these Android announcements are just yummy, I guess. So with this new update to the Android operating system, they've got a lot of features actually that they're implementing here. And Riz, since you are here to talk with us about Android as our Android anorak, tell us a little bit about what we should expect from Pi.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Yeah, there's quite a lot of changes. The main thing that we've seen, particularly starting with the Android Oreo last year, was that Google with Android are attempting to go towards a more AI system. So what they're trying to do is trying to predict what you're going to do next. Now, they've gone a step further in Android version 9, which is called Pi. Whichever flavor of pie, it's up to you, I guess.
Apple pie?
Raspberry.
Raspberry pie? I think that one's taken.
Yeah, I think Raspberry Pi has been taken. And maybe they'll use that for R. I don't know. If they can get the copyright, we'll find out. So it's got a heck of a lot of features. And it's, I think, broken down into a few sections. First of all, they've tweaked the AI a bit. So what they've done is they've changed the notifications just a little bit. And they've made them simpler. The big change they've done is they've added gestures. So before, what you would do is in the bottom, usually it's in the bottom right-hand corner. On some systems, it's the bottom left. They have this button called the overview button, which shows up all your apps. If you double tap that, then you switch. You can do an app switching thing. Now what you can do is if you swipe to the right, you could switch apps with that. Because what they've done is they've actually gotten rid of this overview button. And so now if you swipe a little way up the screen, you get your recent apps. If you swipe all the way to the top, you get all your apps. So they've added gestures like this. They've got rid of the overview button. And they've still got the back button. So it kind of looks lopsided sometimes.
I can feel Tim biting his lip now saying, iPhone 10.
iPhone 10. Yeah, you know me so well, Sean, because I am thinking that there are some other features that I'm sure we'll get to in a moment that just scream iOS 12 and iPhone 10. But to be fair, this is kind of the way smartphones are going, is less buttons, more gestures, more features for your usage of the phone and privacy and security and the AI involved as well. So you're right in saying that, Sean, but I think this is just where these companies are going.
Well, they're all going in that way, aren't they, really? Because it's, you see, start from one company and then everybody else adopts it. Because you could disable or re-enable the this button, this overview button, as it's called. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to get people off using that. I don't know whether they're going to eventually do away with the back button completely. Interesting thing about it, though, is it only appears when it's needed and then it goes away. Like if you're on the home screen, it doesn't show up. And then you just have the home button.
It seems to me, so let's just backtrack a little bit. So this currently is available on the Pixel range of phones from Google.
Yeah, it's on the Pixel range of phones. It'll come to some other phones as well. It's also on the Essential phone as well. They've actually moved on to the Android Pie as well. So anyone who's got one of those phones, the three people that have it.
Ooh, don't attack Android now.
Wow.
but yeah, I think you're absolutely right that the introducing of this gesture navigation, I think, is, you know, pointing the way to the Pixel 3 phone. We will be getting into the Samsung event shortly, and you know, this is sort of the kickoff of event season. We got the Apple event coming up. Google I/O will be coming up in October. In that event, we are expecting to see the Pixel 3, their next generation of smartphone. And you know, as we've said before, all the phones are going in the direction of more screen, less bezel. So I think it makes sense that they're introducing these gesture navigation now, and it seems to work well.
Yeah, I think it does. I've played around with it, and it works well with TalkBack so far. There are a few little minor hiccups. It's funny, whenever I talk to Stephen about it, he always says, you know, what's new in terms of TalkBack on whenever there's an update. And usually with Android, what they do is they update the operating system separately to all the other things. Like, for instance, your all your accessibility stuff is updated on its own. So I think it will improve. And actually, it's running very smoothly at the moment. And there are some other things we can get to, other improvements that they've made in a few minutes with that. But essentially, yeah, they're slowly going to a system whereby they want people to use these gestures. And, you know, it works perfectly well with TalkBack so far.
And another thing I noticed that was quite interesting, you mentioned the notifications, slightly, you know, more of a visual adjustment to the notifications. But I did notice they've started moving the information like the clock and the battery life to the sides now. They're getting ready to introduce that notch.
The dreaded notch, yes. Yeah.
So for those of you that don't know, the iPhone X has for the Face ID, it has a notch because it's full screen, you know, hardly any bezels on it. It has a notch at the top of the screen. And it's been a love-hate relationship with the notch because it does obviously overlap onto the screen. But it does seem that the next Pixel phone will probably have a notch as well.
Unfortunately, it does sound like it. And the only reason why I've got an issue with it is because I don't know why. Because the one annoying thing I found is when a couple of years ago, when they first came out with the first Pixel, they made a point of saying, look, we've got a headphone jack, unlike other companies. Then the next year, they got rid of that.
Yes.
Now, you know, it's a surprise they all say, look, we haven't got a notch. And then next year, they'll come out with a phone that supports a notch.
Yeah, they take that 1 year to diss whatever it is, you know, the headphone jack or the notch. And then the next year, they say, actually, that's not a bad idea.
No, I think that's exactly right. But they do, again, in all fairness, they do this back and forth. Apple definitely borrows from Android and Samsung and other Google phones, and they borrow from Apple back as well. So in a way that is good and bad for us as consumers, because the dreaded notch, as you guys said, you know, it's good and bad at the same time. And if it's adopted by everybody, well, we just have to deal with it. That being said, when we're going to these gesture-based operations and updating notification areas and all these other features that they borrow from each other, in a way, as long as it makes the operation of the phone and the, you know, usability of the phone better, I don't really have a problem with it. But yeah, if there's something that they're borrowing from each other that's just stupid, well, yeah, then why do that? on that note, though, we talked about a little bit of change to the notifications area. You said, Sean, they're going to do that. And they're also, again, iOS 12, they have this new digital well-being coming to Android Pi as well, Riz, that sounds very similar to screen time in iOS 12.
Well, I don't know what it does in that, but what happens here is gradually the screen will go grayer and they're trying to get people off their phones, essentially, and you could set, you know, certain parameters. It's interesting enough, it's not actually out yet. What they've done is they've released Android Pi, that's out, but some of the features haven't come out. Like, they've done the battery level, they've done all the other things, but this wellness thing, this digital wellness part of the, has not been introduced yet. So how it'll work, what it will do, we'll have to wait and see how good it is. I think that's coming out in October.
Yeah, that's true. They are pushing some of these features back a little bit. Like you said, part of it is when it goes into the evening, it'll go to a grayscale mode, very similar to how the Apple phones would go to kind of a yellowish mode for their nighttime mode or night shift mode. So it's just to relax your eyes and also remind you, hey, it's getting kind of late, you know, step away from your phone. But then from what I've read, it sounds like this digital well-being mode will also kind of say, here's how long you've been in an app or a type of app. Here's how much you've used.
Yeah, it'll tell you how long you've spent on each app and everything else. It'll give you times on how which apps you've used and how long for.
Exactly. So having a feature like that, again, we could say, well, it's copy this, copy that. But this is something that I think they've all kind of gone to at the same time, just because of some of the pushback from different places saying, hey, you know, people spend way too much time on their phone.
Fake news.
In a way, I'm getting there, Sean. You're going to have an open forum here to rant. You know, people say, there's studies that say that we could be addicted to our phones, and that can be detrimental to our lives. And so these companies feel they have to put in these kind of well-being modes or screen time type of tracking modes. And
nanny state.
It's all being done at the same time, oddly enough. And Sean has a few things he probably wants to say about that. Right, Sean?
No, actually, Tim, you're wrong, because I've said it all before. Yeah, look, I'm not a great believer in we need to be monitored. These tools are useful. Don't get me wrong. These tools are useful to see, particularly, you know, I think if you're a parent, to see how much time your children yes. are spending on certain apps or whatever, then yeah, they're really useful. And even for myself. But the whole, you know, nag screen, oh, do you know you've been spending 16 hours on YouTube watching cats? I'm not into that. You know, I think, I don't know. I think it's a different age, you know, digital media, social media. It's just we're always consuming this stuff. I'm not sure we need this, but hey, it's a nice tool to be out there. And the digital well-being, actually, I find it quite strange that it's in beta. You can use it now. You can download the beta program.
Yes, you can download the beta program, yes.
And install it. But mm-hmm. It'll be nice when it's finished.
I'm sure it will, but honestly, I have to agree with you, Sean. I think it is a bit nanny state, if you ask me.
Yay, someone believes in me. Thank you, Riz.
The one
You're
person.
Welcome. But it's true. I think people should, you know, be responsible for what they do themselves. It's not like, you know, it's not like it's an enforced feature. You can turn it on or off. So, yeah. You know, if a person's going to turn it on, then surely they just got to the trouble of just putting their phone down anyways.
Yes, that's right.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And I do agree, I hate to say this, but I do agree to a certain extent that we should kind of police ourselves and be aware of the time we're using our phones. But from a parental point of view, like you said, Riz, I love the idea of being able to track what my child can do on the phone, know what app she's using and how long she's using them. That's helpful for me as a parent to understand, okay, maybe I wasn't watching the clock very well. Maybe I didn't realize she was on it that long, whatever. It's nice to be able to have it tell me that information. It's scary to have it tell me the information, because Sean, I know you told me this. I think you texted me this a couple weeks ago when you were using iOS 12 beta and you're like, oh my gosh, I got my first report on screen time.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. And I just got my first report on the beta test of iOS 12 yesterday or today. A couple days ago I got it, I guess. And I was astonished. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much I've used this app and that app and how much time I've been on my phone. I'm like, I might have to turn this off because I just don't know if I like this.
But why? Why does it matter? If you're learning something, if you're creating something, if you're being productive, then it doesn't matter how long you spend on it. That's my argument, but we won't go down that again.
Yeah, don't go down that rabbit hole or cat hole on YouTube, as you said.
Yeah, the only thing is, Tim, I think you have a point with the whole kids thing. And in that sense, I agree with you. But because you're like a tech-savvy person, you know how to use these elements. But a lot of people who give a kid a phone, they're half the stuff they don't know how to use themselves. And the kid will probably know how to override that anyways.
Reset.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the concern. And you definitely want to make sure you've got that passcoded and all that locked down. But yeah, that's a whole other thing. But you're right. I mean, it is a certain degree of the child knowing more than the parent and navigating these things, you know, for themselves. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if my daughter starts hacking our devices very
I think
soon.
We can all agree, like, it's a useful tool, but yes. I don't think you should rely on it too much. And, you know, I think you've got to be responsible for yourself.
Absolutely.
Well said. So then with Android Pi, in addition to all of those things, I know there's some other specific features they have that are involved here, as well as some updates to accessibility.
Yeah, the accessibilities, they're integrating different elements of AI into their accessibility. They're working on the browser as well, and I've noticed that actually working, because what they've done is they've integrated all of the accessibility features into, you know, the core of the system. And what it's done is it's made Chrome and other browsers a little bit faster, made them a little bit better. So I'm happy about that. And they're slowly going to integrate everything, you know, because they don't call it TalkBack anymore. They call it accessibility services or something like that. I can't remember.
The accessibility suite.
Suite. That's the word. Not services. Suite. Yeah. It began with S. That's the one. Yeah.
Close enough.
Android Anorak should know that. And they've got this other feature whereby if you perform a task regularly, you can actually quickly jump to that task just by tapping once on the screen. So the idea is to have fewer taps. So for instance, if there's an option called Ring Shown, if you do it often enough, then it comes up in your list of apps. There's like a row where it's got two actions. And these actions they change periodically. Mine haven't changed much so far, but they're supposed to change depending on which features you use. So instead of going into your phone app and then calling Sean, all you do is you just tap that and it'll call Sean automatically. The other thing you could do with that as well is if it's something you want to use regularly, you can put it on your home screen. So they're trying to integrate those kinds of features in there as well.
Again, comes down to the artificial intelligence. It's monitoring what you're doing regularly, what actions you do regularly, and then giving you that option as a list or an action you can do just straight off the screen. I think that's a good idea. It does remind me, I hate to compare it back to Apple, but you know, in iOS 12, we are getting Siri shortcuts, which is much the same thing. It monitors what actions you perform regularly, and the addition to that is that it gives you the ability to add it to a voice command to perform a set of actions. But yeah, that's definitely a good thing. I'm actually, to be honest, I thought that was in Android already.
No, it's not. It's this is brand new to Android version 9. It wasn't there before.
Yeah, the artificial intelligence with these phones now is finally getting to a good place, I think, with Siri shortcuts, like you said, Sean, and these new features within Android Pi. It's going to make using the phone, I think, a lot easier. I have been using the beta version of iOS 12 on my iPhone, and the Siri shortcuts app isn't fully available yet. It's just for developers, but you can still go into settings and use some of it for some of the built-in apps. And I've really enjoyed using some of these and creating voice shortcuts for a lot of these things that I do all the time. And so I can't wait for them to roll out the full featured app to where I can do all kinds of different things. And I imagine from what I've read, it's going to be the similar experience on Android Pi to be able to type in or tap onto something and be able to get that instant access. And I like that. I like the recommendations of it. I like that you can get that information, you know, instantly, whether it is by tap or voice or what have you. And so again, it's just something that it seems like they're copying each other, but honestly, it's just, I think, the next progression of the app, which again, they have other progressions as well, because as we know, Apple has had a lot of battery settings and changes to how their batteries are monitored and swapping out batteries and things like that. And of course, with Android Pi, they're doing a similar thing and upgrading the battery area within the operating system, right, Riz?
That's correct, yes. You can actually control to a much finer degree your battery usage. It tells you how much each app is using. And what it does now is it uses, again, we go back to the AI thing, it uses the AI to see which apps aren't being used, and it will reduce the amount of battery they take up. So the essentially what it's going to do, or the idea is, that your battery is supposed to go a lot longer with these AI features, because all the apps that you're not running using immediately, it'll reduce the amount of battery they're using and push them into the background.
And I know, Sean, this is something similar that Apple has done, where they'll unpack or unload bits of an app that you haven't been using. I know it frustrates Steven to no end when that happens, and he can't use his app.
Steven.
Well, that's true. A lot of things frustrate Steven, but that's definitely one of them on the top of the list, where it'll unpack or unload part of an app and you go to use it and it's got to re-download it. But that being said, for storage purposes, for battery purposes, what Android is doing and what Apple has done with this is actually kind of helpful.
Yeah, well, on Apple's side, it's more for saving storage space, isn't it? You know,
right.
You can unload it from the actual iPhone itself, and it will download it when it needs it. Whereas this is all to do with getting as much battery life. If you've got an app in the background that you're not using, somehow, I have no idea how this works, but it can, you know, save battery power on that. I have no idea how that works at all. But it sounds really good. They're saying you could get 20% extra battery life from a Pixel phone. And I don't know how, in real use, I don't know how true that is, but I think it's a good idea. I mean, battery life is one of the major things on a phone.
Even if it can pick you up another half an hour or an hour of usage throughout the day before you have to charge again, that's still quite a bit of time and a lot of battery savers. So yeah, I think that if anything to save battery on any of these devices is welcome. Although it's funny, they put in features to help prolong the battery so that you can use your phone more, at the same time as they put in features to prevent you from using it so much. So, you know, it is it's kind
of
hypocritical.
If you don't use it at all, the battery will last a week. It'll be fine. It'll
exactly.
Last forever.
Right. Well, there's so many other things, of course, with any operating system upgrade. There's so many things that we could go on and on about the whole show on this, but we have other things we want to talk about, of course. So I'm sure we'll touch on Android Pie more and more as things get rolled out. Like Riz said, not all the features are currently available, but they are being rolled out. So as that happens, we'll talk more about that coming up on future episodes of Tech Talk. But keeping with this kind of conversation around Android phones and things, Samsung recently had an event called Samsung Unpacked. Now, Sean, I know you've been looking into this quite a bit, and you've got some things to tell us about Samsung Unpacked.
Well, you know me, Tim. I'm such a fan of anything Android, and I had to check this out.
Yes, well, look. Ran not walk to the Android event coverage, absolutely.
No, I got to say, I am a fan of Samsung. I think they do beautiful hardware.
Yeah, they do.
Whether it be TVs, fridges, washing machines, or whatever, I think they do really good stuff.
A lot of their hardware is in an iPhone, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no denying that, you know, they are up there when it comes to the smartphones. You know,
yes.
They make beautiful smartphones.
They make them with the best ones, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So the Samsung Unpacked event. Now, the Samsung event is so strange to me. It's the actual presentation of it. It's so a bit sickly. It's almost, you know, they put so much oomph into it. I suppose you could say the same thing about any of these keynotes, Apple or Google's.
I think all guilty of that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But there is something slightly weird about the Samsung ones. Let me just put that out there. But okay, so they announced three main pieces of hardware at this event. Now, the first one is that they're joining the smart speaker revolution. They have brought out, well, they will be bringing out a Galaxy smart speaker. Now, the speaker side of it does actually look really nice. It's bigger than most of the, you know, your usual Dots and Echoes and Homes. And they are really pushing the sound quality. Actually, at the event, they played 160 of these together, and apparently the sound was amazing. So speaker-wise, it's meant to have really nice sound. Now, the smart side of it is slightly worrying to me, because they will be using the, I think it's called Bixby.
Bixby,
yes.
Yeah. The one that nobody likes.
Yes, this is actually, the Bixby in the smart speaker is, well, as far as we know, the latest, the new version. So this is Bixby Mark II. So there are improvements to this. And some of the examples they gave, you know, it's stuff we've seen every voice assistant do really, but it seemed to work and it worked nicely and, you know, it picked up the voice well. But Bixby has got a bit of a reputation now. It's a bit, you know, it came too late. It didn't do a great job. So we'll have to wait and see. But they did announce also a partnership with Spotify. So because obviously, you know, Apple's got Apple Music, Amazon's got Amazon Music, Google the same, whereas Samsung, they've got no music streaming service of their own. So they've partnered with Spotify, and Spotify will be providing their music streaming service for their speakers and actually through all their hardware, they said, even refrigerators, which sounded strange, but hey, you know, I'm not saying anything. So there's no price on this yet, and I'm going to be really interested to see where they target this. On the low end, we've got the Google Home Minis and the Echo Dots, and then we've got the HomePod at the other side and the Google Max. So where this comes in, I'm going to guess somewhere in the middle. So I would guess around, you know, between £100 and £200 maybe, but we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, it's an interesting move that they've seen this market growing, and Amazon are really stealing this market. So I suppose they had to make a move eventually.
I think they were bound to. The only thing is, I just don't know a lot. I know a lot of people who have Samsung phones. I don't know a lot of people who use Bixby.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have a Samsung phone, so I can't really comment on it. But I'm just going off hearsay. You know, people just, they tend to forget about it. It's different. Despite all the harsh things I've got to say about Siri, I do use it a lot for sending texts, making calls, or whatever. And the same for the Google Assistant. I was nearly going to say the trigger word then, but same for the Google Assistant. I know a lot of people use that a lot.
I do. I think the Google Assistant's amazing. I think it's really, really good. And it's come along. I've seen its progress, and I think it's really come along. Why Samsung can't just incorporate that? I don't know whether they'd make that an option in this new speaker of theirs. I think they should. But then if they do that, then they're obviously taking away from their own Bixby, which they obviously want people to use, because they've even put it on buttons on some phones, haven't they? So
that's right. Yeah, and it's, well, actually, let's move on to that phone. Their flagship, the Galaxy Note 9. Now, of course, there was an issue with the Note 7. who could
just a minor little issue with the Note 7? Yes,
a minor little glitch that it would just explode randomly. So there was, you know, that whole thing. The Galaxy Note 8 did address that, and you know,
yeah, it did, and it's working real fine. You know, I know people have got the Note 8 and there've been no issues with it since, and it's actually a really nice looking phone. It works really well, so they address whatever the issues are with that.
Exactly, and they did put in a process for, you know, multi-point checking of the batteries, and in fact in this latest one, the Note 9, it's a 6.4 inch phone, so it's a beast, and it comes with a 4000 milliamp battery. I know this is getting a bit geeky and technical, but basically it comes with a large battery, and they're confident. It seems like they've got their confidence back now, and they think they can get their the confidence of the consumer back. They've got a big battery in this. The battery life is meant to be great. It's a nice phone. It is difficult to really point to anything specific that, you know, it's much better than the iPhone 10 or the Pixel 2. You know
what I think is going to be interesting, Sean? Sorry.
No, go on.
How are they going to price this now? That's the thing that really interests me, because right now, you know, the way they priced their Samsung S9, you know, it was a high-end, obviously, it was a high-end one. Then, of course, Apple did their £1,000 or whatever it was. I'm interested to see where on earth they're going to put their pricing now with this phone.
Well, Riz, I would be surprised if it was as high-priced as those other flagship phones, because, honestly, with as good as the Pixel 2 has done and the iPhone 10, of course, sold better than I think anybody would have ever thought, especially at that price point, Samsung may be looking at this going, hey, why not? Why not put out a phone that costs £1,000? Because other companies are doing it, and it's selling. It works. People are apparently willing to pay for it. So why not? So I wouldn't be shocked if it was £800, £900, £1,000. It really wouldn't surprise me, especially being their flagship phone and being such a beast, like Sean said. This is a large screen. This is a large battery, and you're going to pay for all of that.
I blame Apple. See, it's all Apple's fault. They put it out there, and we just, oh, okay, yeah, £1,000, we'll buy it.
Sheep,
and, you
know, sheep.
You just got to look at their last quarter where their earnings were in the billions. So it obviously hasn't had an impact, them raising the price to that $1,000 sort of watershed, if you like. Will people pay this? Well, apparently, yes.
Apparently, they will. And that's the problem. People don't make the, you know, they'll... If you made a decision not to buy that phone, then perhaps they'd bring the prices down. But I think you're right, Tim. I think they are going to price it in that level of 900 to 1,000. And that's what's really sad now. We're going to be expecting phones to cost that much. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, let me put you both out of your misery, because they did announce the prices. And I think the starting price was 999 for the 128 gig model. But it goes all the way up to 512 gig. And that was coming in around the $1,200 or $1,300 mark.
Wow.
So it's on a par with the iPhone X. And, but to be fair, I mean, this is a big phone. This is the top end, you know,
it's the flagship, the big main one.
Model.
It is. And it's not a surprise to me that they've gone with that, because you could see that they're going to just make as much. And people buy those phones as well. Samsung's incredibly popular, you know, they're... Even with the issues with the one a couple of years ago, the Note 7, still people went bought the Note 8, and you know they've been very satisfied with it, and people are going to buy those phones because.
It's funny. Excuse me laughing, but it is funny because with the Note 7, you know, it was a serious risk. I mean, maybe they did a total recall on it, you know. Everyone's got to send it back. And there was people that said, no, I love this phone. I'm not sending it back. They actually had to put a software update out there which turned the phone off. It basically bricked the phone because people loved it. I said, no, it's fine. Mine's not going to catch fire. I'm keeping it.
Have you guys ever used or... Well, yeah, I know you haven't used one. Have you ever held a Samsung phone?
I have, yes. Just the normal Galaxies. I haven't had a Note, but yeah...
They're very, very nice. The build quality usually is such a high quality. They really do make nice phones. I'm just not a big fan of their operating system that they have there. So that's why I never use it.
Well, let's not get into this. This is the whole, you know, Android fragmentation, skins on top of the Android. And this is the whole issue that people have a problem. Well, that's my problem with Android is, you know, I just want stock, basically. And
buy a Pixel, Sean. Buy the Pixel 3.
Buy a Pixel. Well, we will see in the Google I/O event in October when they announce it. Even with its huge notch on the top, I will give it a look.
Well, in my case, I have not held a Samsung phone, at least not for a long time, since I last went to the store and looked into getting a smartphone. But that being said, this whole conversation, the only thing I got out of it was that Riz said I was right. So I'll take that and run with it. So, Sean, out of the Samsung Unpacked event, there was one or two other things that I know you wanted to make sure to mention here. What else happened at this event?
Well, the last thing I want to mention is the Galaxy Watch. So Samsung's own smartwatch. There was a lot of excitement about this. It's a round-faced watch. But the big thing for me was that they actually said in the keynote, they will get 7 days life out of this, out of one charge. Now, when you compare that to the competition, let's say the Apple Watch, you know, where you've got to charge it nightly, maybe a day and a half you'll get out of it. That is some incredible number. Now, again, real life use, who knows how true that is. But it is an LTE watch as well. So, you know, it's connected. It's a touchscreen. It's everything you would expect of a smartwatch. You know, it's got fitness elements in there as well. But I don't know. The only thing I'm unsure about with this watch, again, the price wasn't announced on this. We don't know how much it's going to cost. They didn't even announce when it was going to be released. But it's going to be running not Android Wear, but Samsung's own operating system called Tizen. Now, the only thing alarm bells start ringing for me when I hear that is accessibility, accessibility, accessibility. Is there going to be any? I have no idea. But there was a lot of excitement about this watch.
I don't think anybody knows yet how accessible it's going to be. I mean, Samsung do their work on accessibility more often than not. So there's a chance that it might be, but I wouldn't hold your breath just yet.
I think it's a wait and see kind of thing. And I have a feeling, again, with this, the price point's probably going to be very similar to the Apple Watch. That wouldn't shock me at all because, again, they're going to say, hey, this does basically what an Apple Watch can do. If it does have that accessibility, if they have some version of a screen reader in there, if it's TalkBack or something else, or the accessibility suite, excuse me, if it's something like that, then this could be a huge contender, especially within our community, for a watch, for a smartwatch. Especially because of that battery life. It's really the only thing I don't like about the Apple Watch line. Even though, that being said, I don't have a problem with it personally. I just know it's one negative feature that a lot of people don't like. I have absolutely no problem taking my watch off every night, putting it on the charger, whether it's a wireless charger or a dock or whatever that I've got next to my bed or my night table. It's no problem. I take my watch off at night anyway, so I don't have that issue. Now, I know some people want to use it for sleep tracking and things like that, and you still can. Like you said, Sean, you can get a day and a half probably and do some sleep tracking. But if this watch can get you 7 days, even if in real life you get 4 or 5 days, that's still going to be a whole lot better. So this could be a major contender. But again, like you said, Riz, will it be accessible? We'll just have to wait and see. But I do think it's going to be priced, at least £300 plus. I wouldn't be shocked.
But the other thing with this, though, thinking about it, I mean, the Apple Watch is part of the Apple ecosystem. Same with Android Wear. It's, all to do with the Android devices. Where does Tizen fit in with that? Will it be, is it based on Android? I'm assuming it is. Or is it their own specific thing? In which case, how connected is it to other devices other than Samsung?
What would be really impressive is if they do use, say, Android as kind of the background operating system, but they make it available as a third party kind of watch. So it might be based on Android, but not reliant, if that makes sense, on Android. So you could maybe use it with some sort of Samsung app on an iPhone or an Android or what have you, and be able to use it cross platform. I think honestly, if they don't do that, they're silly not to. They'd be foolish, because if they did that, it would make someone like myself, who's desperately waiting for the Apple Watch 4 to come out, I would actually consider looking at this if it was something I could use cross-platform and actually use with my iPhone in some way.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether it's going to be a version of Android Wear that they've put a skin on, like they've done with their own operating system on, and I'm wondering if that's what it is, or unless it's a completely new system. They started from scratch, but how much it interacts with other devices, other Android phones, or even if it interacts with Apple phones, I guess it's all just a wait and see.
Absolutely. And you know what? After all that talk, I think I'm missing Stephen. We haven't mentioned lamb chops. We haven't had any ridiculous, stupid analogies that he likes to do. I think we've teched out on this one. I think we've geeked too hard, Tim.
A little bit of a geek fest. Absolutely. There's been no tandoori lamb chops, no talk about biscuits or crisps, not what is Stephen eating this week, which I do feel kind of empty without all that. Sean, you're absolutely right.
We're missing you, Stephen.
We miss you, Stephen. Please hurry back. Hope all is well with you and the family issues, and we look forward to seeing you back next week.
But anyway, now it's time for this
news from the internet.
That's right. It is once again time for the news. And Sean, I know you've got a really interesting story this week to share out of London.
I know. I've got a news story. It's amazing. It's usually you,
it's
Tim.
It's shocking.
But I love this one, and it's out of London. So Google have the artificial intelligence called DeepMind. I love that name for a start. Now, it's probably most famous for playing games. I think, didn't it do the Go, which is a Chinese game of strategy that it actually beat the world master at?
Yep.
But more interestingly, and more targeted towards us as visually impaired people, is that Moorfields Hospital in London, very famous eye hospital, they've been trialing DeepMind and machine learning to take a look at all the retina scans. They're called OCTs. Now, what that stands for, I have no idea. Optical something topography, something like that.
I'll take your word for it.
But basically,
close
it's
enough.
Yes. It's where they take a picture of the back of the eye, the retina, and, they take 1,000 of these images every day at Moorfields, and it takes a doctor, an actual human, to look at them to see if there's any potential eye problems, because you do see them in the retina. So what they've been doing is, in association with Google and DeepMind, is they've been teaching the artificial intelligence to look at these and look out for these problems. And at the end, anyway, the end result of these trials is that DeepMind can identify potential problems with the same accuracy as a human. So obviously this has a huge impact on how many of these images it can look through every day. If you imagine 1,000 images to look through every day, you know, and a human pair of eyes have got to be looking at these, if you can automate this and get artificial intelligence to get the same accuracy as a human, this could have a huge impact on the, well, not only the amount of images that it, and, you know, if it's an image, it's a person, the amount of people it can process, but also the amount of time. As most of us know, anything to do with, you know, eye problems, time can be a factor. So if it can diagnose and pick up on potential problems quickly, this could be a game changer. And the results of this trial are so encouraging. And, you know, these are the one thing, when you think of artificial intelligence and what we're using it for at the moment, you know, telling us the time, weather or whatever, this application of it is, I think, fantastic.
Yeah, this technology is really fascinating to me. I really like when we have things like this where they can not only diagnose but learn and do these things that would be so laborious for human eyes to do, and to take that time away so that humans can do something else and let the machines do this and learn and diagnose these issues. And with a name like DeepMind, it's so very like a division of Skynet. It's just so, it's so just, you know what I mean? It's just so cool. But to be able to do that and have that ability, yeah, as someone who, you know, is blind and visually impaired, you know, this type of technology is really fascinating. What do you think about this, Riz?
I think it's really good that they're using AI for something that could potentially save people's eyesight in the future. I mean, I think that's how big it could be if it all works well. And, you know, it's going to save time, and it's potentially going to save, you know, so much manpower that people can then do other things that, you know, don't require the time that this would have done. So, you know, you're getting machines to do something, I think, that could save people's visions, or, you know, diagnose them early enough, and who knows what you could do. Because a lot of times, if they get diagnosed late, then, you know, your chance of being able to save it or improve on it are slim. But so I think this is wonderful news if it works.
And of course, this isn't just about time, because it's the accuracy rates that are quite amazing about this. It isn't less than a human doctor taking a look at these. These are on a par with them. And this is early days in the learning. So, you know, there may be a stage when it spots the differences that a human wouldn't be able to spot. So,
yeah, just imagine what this kind of technology could be 5, 10, 20 years from now. This could be amazing technology and be helpful, not just for retinas, but maybe all kinds of different things.
Yeah, this is where artificial intelligence actually does make a difference.
Well, speaking of artificial intelligence, guys, there was a recent story about, well, I'll just say Lady A, the Amazon Echo devices, and potentially they were hacked. Or were they, Sean? Tell us about this story.
Oh, this is the thing of nightmares. So what does everyone say about having a smart speaker in their house? Basically, you've got a microphone on 24/7. Everyone says, you don't know who's going to be listening. And we all say, ah, don't be silly. It's fine. It's safe. It's secure. Well, prepare yourselves, because a security team have recently demonstrated a exploit. Now, before we get carried away, this is really difficult, and it's hard to see how this could be, you know, sort of made widespread and mainstream. But it did allow them to use any Amazon device and listen in, record audio, and also play any sounds they liked through that device, which could be quite funny. But what they actually did, as I said, this isn't something that's easy to do. So they took a Amazon Echo speaker, they took it apart, they took out one of the chips and reprogrammed it, and then soldered it back on to the circuit board and put it back together. Then when they connected that device to a Wi-Fi network with other Amazon devices on it, they were able to perform this hack. So they were able to listen through the microphones of other Amazon Echoes on that Wi-Fi network. So look, this is really difficult to see how this could be used, you know, for most people, but it is an exploit that's out there. And other than just the hardware aspect of, you know, taking an Echo apart, there were also exploits that they used in the Amazon Echo API, the web interface, the things, you know, the things that sort of power the skills. There are exploits there that they had to use. Now, Amazon have already patched all those and fixed all those loopholes. So, you know, it's as ever for the security game, you know, it's playing catch up. But I just thought this was an interesting story that this is the thing that most people, when they think of, I'm not having a smart speaker in my house because they, you know, it's always listening. And actually, well, in this case, they made it happen. And I just thought that was quite scary.
It's scary, but it's crazy because, you know, that's going to take a lot of effort to do that, isn't it? And I wonder if that's kind of articles are a kind of clickbait type thing where they just want people to click in, because honestly, to get to that stage whereby, you know, it's actually going to be listening. And, you know, it's not too far-fetched, seeing as the device is designed about listening. You know, it's, someone was eventually going to do that, you know, rewire it to act in a different way. You know, it's not something that's off, out of scale, but I think people are still so uncomfortable with the whole, you know, is it listening to everything we're saying and everything like that? And
yeah,
it's just, you know, it's going to listen when you want it to listen. It was like that you know, report a few months ago, wasn't it, with the couple and that row. It's just people make the mistakes and then, you know.
That's right. Yes, yes. And then they'll point to that saying, oh, look, it is listening to us. Well, no, you actually activated it and called someone up.
Exactly.
That's what happened. Yeah, we can listen to the history.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know about clickbait. I mean, I suppose that's the point and purpose of these security teams. If it wasn't for this security team trying to do this hack, then Amazon probably wouldn't have fixed those loopholes in the software side. You know, like you said, though, I mean, if people can get access to your hardware, you know, then basically they can do whatever they like with it. You could, if it's got a microphone in it, they can rewire it to do anything they like.
That's it.
So this actually isn't a hack that we should all start worrying about and throwing our smart speakers out. But, you know, I just thought it was an interesting story.
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting story because it shows what's possible if the right hacker at the, well, wrong time, I guess you could say, is that determined to get something done like this and actually make a hack and do something like this and scare people. I mean, this is what it comes down to, is just trying to scare people and feed into that fear that some people already have of it's always listening, you know? And so if you can get people to, you know, take that fear and blow it up out of proportion, then, you know, that could do some damage. But yeah, I agree. I'm not throwing my Echo devices out anytime soon. I'm confident that Amazon is taking care of this. And so I have no worries. That being said, when you're talking about accessing information and being hacked on an Echo device, there are also times where the law can prevent you from being able to get access to things. And that's actually happening with the recent implementation of the GDPR with the European Union and United States specific news sites. Now, guys, this may or may not affect you too much because I don't know how much news you guys get from the US. I'm constantly getting my news from BBC and all kinds of places, not just in the US, but around the world. And so this could be hindrance for me if it was back the other direction. But expats or tourists or even people like yourselves that live in the UK or people that live in the European Union in general, about a third of the United States news sites are currently not accessible if you're over in Europe because of the new GDPR rules and regulations about sharing information, privacy and security and all the different things that are involved with GDPR. And we covered it, gosh, a while back now, Sean, I think it was a few months ago. You, Stephen, and I did a nice piece on explaining it. So I won't try to rehash that because, well, I can't remember it all to rehash it, quite honestly. But well, we did do a nice little piece explaining GDPR. But a lot of United States news services aren't complying for one reason or another, and it's making it difficult to access news. And these are major sites. We're not talking just, you know, random local, you know, local newspapers. We're talking major news organizations. Like I said, about a third of the news in the US is not accessible if you're overseas.
That's crazy to me. I honestly don't know. Obviously, I don't look into the news that much, Tim. That's your job on this show.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, I mean, let's have a quick recap for those who don't know. GDPR, basically all it means, all it comes down to for the most, you know, usual consumer is that websites have got to disclose what information they want, what they're going to do with it, and we need to specifically agree to that. They've got to make it clear what we're agreeing to and give us the option. You know, it can't just be by default you agree. We've got to actually tick a box or, you know, whatever. That's really basic, but, you know, in this case, that's what it comes down to. So why the US news sites are being so weird about this, I'm not entirely sure.
I think the whole thing's very strange because, you know, a lot of websites, and when GDPR was going, there were so many emails coming through and everything else, but I think it's really strange that, you know, there are a lot of people who be interested in stories in the States, and, you know, if you're going to take people out of that, then that's going to be very difficult for them because they're not going to be able to keep up with this. And if these are, you know, really big place news places, then, you know, some people want that information. They want to know what's going on in the world, and they're taking that away from them.
Well, Tim needs his Trump news, you know, but he's okay because he's in the US anyway.
Oh, no more Trump news. Oh, no more Trump. Well, anyway, moving on. Yeah, because I agree. This is silly. This is ridiculous that these major news companies can't set up their terms of service properly and their privacy policies, you know, in an appropriate way to share this. They've got to understand they're international news outlets. They have viewers and listeners and readers all around the world. Why on earth would you not update these things? It doesn't take too much. Heck, for my own personal website, I had to put on a new privacy policy for just podcasting because my podcast is heard in Europe. So I had to put certain policies on there to allow people to know what I would do with my show. You know, so if I can do it...
What are you doing with my details,
I'm
Tim?
Not doing anything with your details. That's the point.
That's what you say. I don't trust you.
That's what the privacy policy says or has to say. But these companies, I can't believe that, you know, if somebody like me can do this, you know, why can't they? So this is just ridiculous to me. Now, we are running out of time, guys. I do want to tease because hopefully when Stephen comes back, we can ask him about this. There's a story that we won't get to really talk about this week, but Panasonic has put out a new device that within 5 hours, it promises to remove all the odors from your shoes. So maybe we'll get Stephen to talk about that next week.
I'm definitely one for Stephen.
Definitely,
what are you saying?
Definitely one for Stephen. Yeah, I have to know what he has
we'll
to
We'll have
feel
to get
about
him
that.
To test it.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's why I think it's for Stephen. So moving along, I think it's time for emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
That's right. We've got your emails today, and we're running so short on time. I want to bring in Chris to help us with these emails. But Chris, no time for pleasantries. We've got to get right into it. So tell us about that first email.
The first one is just a nice email. Just a nice email from Ty Rocky, who says, I really like listening to your podcast. I am very into technology. I have an iPhone SE, an iPad, a Braille Note, and I also have an Amazon Echo. The Amazon Echo is really helpful for blind people.
Well, I can't disagree with that. The Amazon Echo is absolutely very helpful for people.
Yeah, not a lot I can say to that one, Ty, but thanks for the email, and I'm glad you enjoy the show. But you are absolutely right. Smart speakers are so incredibly useful for us, you know, especially if you're visually impaired. I know people just say, oh, it's just a talking clock or an accessible radio. Well, yes, it is, but they can do so much more. They're fantastic. I love smart speakers, despite the possibility of it being hacked.
That's absolutely right. Yep. All right. Next email, Chris.
Our second email is a bit longer. It comes from Julian, or Jules, who says, hello, Stephen, Sean, and Tim. I've been listening to your discussion about accessible mobile phones. You talked about smartphones and voice-controlled phones, but I was surprised that you did not make more of the fact that calls and texts can both easily be done by voice control on existing smartphones. I know that it can be done with Android because I do it. I presume that Apple is similarly capable. It is true that for a VIP new to smartphones, someone with a little knowledge would have to set up OK Google and enter the contacts list, but the latter is straightforward and would be a good introduction to touch screens after someone had helped with the first three or four. There is also one slight flaw in the way Android handles voice-generated text in conjunction with TalkBack. You probably already know what it is, and I do not want this email to get too long. Since phoning and texting, even using the Google Assistant, it's pretty basic stuff. The phone can be an inexpensive one. I agree with Sean that smartphones are the better way forward, and this seems like a reasonably cheap way for a doubtful VIP to experiment. Perhaps one of you could demonstrate how easy it is to make calls this way. I love the Thunderbirds theme. Regards from Jules.
Well, thanks, Jules, and we love the Thunderbirds theme as well. And don't tell Sean that you agree with him. That'll just go to his head. Don't do that.
No, I like that. Yeah, thank you, Jules.
I know you like that. But when it comes to doing these things with voice on a smartphone, he's absolutely right that this can be done with an iPhone as well as on the Android phones. And I'll throw this to you then, Anurag, because he does mention the Android line quite a bit here. This is something that's very easily done on Android, isn't it?
It's extremely easy. It works really well. And you're only going to get issues, like the little bits of issues he was talking about, I've not come across, but it's a very seamless and it's a smooth experience. I've done it so many times.
Yeah, it's something I actually forgot about. It is so easy. It's something I use all the time. Just ask your voice assistant to dial a number or call a contact or send a message. Yeah, it's a really good point. And Tim will have a feature on that next week.
Sure he will. Stay tuned for a while on that. Moving right along, I think we have one more email, Chris.
So our final email this week is in response to my favourite email of last week, which was from Simon, who said that while searching for something to buy on Amazon, he accidentally bought himself a brilliant USB drive. We were all joking and conjecturing about what he could have been searching for on Amazon, but just to clear it up, Simon emails, "Hi Steve and the gang. If you do a search for FixGet on Amazon, you will get the USB iOS pen drive I mentioned. Sorry for the oversight. Best wishes, Simon."
I don't know what to say about that, but thank you for clearing that up, Simon. We were intrigued as to what you bought. So for anyone who didn't hear, last week Simon got a fantastic pen drive able to copy files across media files, and also you can plug it directly into your phone, Apple and Android phone, and copy the files onto your phone. Yeah, sounds great, and I will search for that. FixGet, thank you.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to be looking that up because it sounds like a fantastic device. I would have never thought FixGet of all the things he was searching for. That was not on my list. But this sounds like a nice device, though, especially since it would work on Apple and Android.
Yeah, like you'll ever have an Android device, Tim. Anyway, that's it. We've got no more time for emails. Thank you, Sighted Guy Chris.
Thank you once more. See you next week.
Well, guys, time flies when you're having fun or just having something, I don't know. But we are out of time this week, so I want to thank both of you. Sean Priest, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And the Android Anorak Riz, as always, thank you for helping out this week.
Well done, Riz.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much, host Tim and Guru Sean.
And thank you all to the Tech Talker listeners out there. We appreciate it. If you have questions or comments, again, send your emails to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And we'll see you again next week with hopefully the return of Stephen Scott. Goodbye, everybody.